Thank you for listening in on our next podcast in the series Intergenerational Conversations on Climate. The podcast brings together voices from high school students and senior citizens from around New Brunswick to discuss their concerns about climate change in our province. The project is the product of Voices for Sustainable Environments and Communities as part of your province's Environmental Trust Fund at Work. Today, we are in Gagetown with several conversations exploring concerns and hopes represented by senior citizens and high school seniors. Climate crises appear in global and national news with increasing frequency and desperation. Voices of concern can be heard every day. Voices of hope are less common. How do our friends and neighbors think about the new climate? Let's find out. Today we have Isabel and Grant willing to share their thoughts. I'm Bruce Langus, and I'll be the facilitator. The first question, we'll go to Isabel on this one. How familiar are you with the climate changes?
I'd say I'm very familiar. Even the last 10 years, I've noticed more of an increase. Even in like news articles, and you just hear it more on CBC and the radio of weather disasters, animal extinction, oceans getting warmer, hotter summers, ozone's getting thinner, things like that.
I'll ask Grant the same question. How familiar are you with the changing climate?
Well, I can see just for myself, like, the winters are getting milder, summers are getting hotter. There's a, you know, people are seeing, like, the oceans are warming up. Lobsters, for instance, are staying softer longer. You can certainly see the effects. Huge cancer rate in New Brunswick, and you got to wonder where that's coming from as well.
Mm-hmm. I'll follow up with Isabel. Do you notice the local changes in the climate, like around Gagetown, around New Brunswick?
I have horses at my house, and for the past 2 years, there's been a very big hay shortage for us, and we've had to bring huge loads of hay and feed in from different provinces and even different countries because there's no water. And the ground is, like, there's just not growing. So that's one that I've been really, that's a personal connection to me because we've had to deal with that over the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Grant, you also live in a rural area. Do you notice the farmers and the ranchers who are putting up with new problems?
Yeah, I do, actually. Like, it's, things go to extreme. Like, you get a lot of rain or you don't get any rain. Or it's very cold, or there's no frost, and it's just not natural for this area.
So. Go on to the next question, Isabel. Where do you get your climate information?
Whenever I want to get facts about the climate, I never go on like opinion-based websites, or I always try and listen to people I know who have like education in this sort of thing. Scientists, biologists, oceanographers, things like that, that I know that get their information from self-based forms and that they aren't just kind of going off, again, like opinion-based ideas, that they're very factual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Grant, where do you get your information about the climate?
Well, there's lots of information online about climate change. Actually, you can see it every day. But what I do notice, you don't see anything on the local news. You don't see anything like anywhere in New Brunswick very much about climate change.
So. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of the people around here, I've been hearing are talking about some of their pine trees. disappearing or dying practically overnight. I know that you have a couple of woodlots that you manage, Grant. Have you noticed the problems with dying pine trees?
Not on my own woodlot, I haven't. But I have seen other areas. It might have to do with elevation and shortage of water in places, but I have seen places where you see big swaths of pine trees dying. And I've seen other places where all the elm is dying, and I don't know if that's a natural phenomenon or that has anything to do with climate change. But no, not on my woodlot, no.
Good, good. Go. This is a similar sort of question. I'll ask this of Grant first. Who do you trust about climate facts and talking about news presenters and political figures?
Well, I certainly don't trust the government for accurate information on the climate change. I think our whole system is driven by money. It really doesn't have much, like, as far as climate change or getting the proper information, I think they put money ahead of health issues. And that's what's scary in this province.
Isabel, I'll ask you the same question. Whom do you trust about climate facts?
I really agree with Grant on the whole political standpoint of things. I really don't trust them. I really agree with what he was saying about money. I feel that, especially with the gas prices right now, all they're talking about is fossil fuels and gas, and that's a very big part of climate change is fossil fuels. But all they're really thinking about is how much money they're getting, raising the prices so far. Like, they know people do need to drive places and that people do need to get to work and go get groceries and just have, like, daily needs that they need to drive. And they're not going to stop doing that just because gas is expensive. So really, they're just making more money for themselves, but it's making it look like, oh, we're trying to get people to cut down on gas, but that's not really what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I really trust environmentalists, kind of what I said in the last question, definitely scientists, biologists, people who have real education and real, like, personal factual information about the subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Grant, what could be, you both expressed a certain amount of lack of trust in our political leaders. What could be done about that? Have you talked to your MLA or your MP about that situation?
No, I haven't. But I think the only thing that could be done, if the government did its job and looked after us, I think the corporations are running this province. That's what I feel. And I'm not alone there. A lot of people feel that way, too. So if they just manned up and did what they were supposed to, I think we'd be far better off.
Isabel, is that your in your high school, do they encourage you to speak to or write to political leaders?
Not usually. Sometimes, like in our English classes or something, just for an assignment, we would write a letter to our political leader, but it's nothing like... they're not sent or they're not anything like that. It's just kind of for fun, for, like, learning opportunities. But I agree with Grant that it's really the big corporations that are running our province and even our country, like going even bigger than just New Brunswick, because it's really all about money. And it really shows, especially in the climate change scheme of things, that, like, this is a very serious problem in bigger than even our country, but in our world. Like, it's said that we might just have 12 years that this planet's livable as, like, the Goldilocks planet. And I don't know why people aren't more scared about that. Because I'm very scared. Like, the next 12 years is not, it's not very far away. Like,
right.
I'm 17. Like, I've been on the Earth more than that I have left, right? So I can't get it around my head that people aren't more nervous and they're not more, like, taking more action on this when the scientists and the biologists who, again, have that education in this kind of genre, that like they're not trusting them. All they're thinking about is how much money they can make, which is not really going to help them in the long run if the world ends. So,
exactly. I'll follow this up with another question to you. It kind of is in the same vein about you being your own politician. Do you talk to others about today's climate?
I try to. I have a few friends that are kind of on my level with the climate change, and I try and do my part. And I if I worry about other people, I feel like I get very stressed and anxious because nobody seems to do anything. But I do my part at home. I do my part at school. I do my part when I'm out around. Like, I try not to use plastic as much as I possibly can. Like when I'm getting food or something, like I always go to a place that I know has paper straws, let's just say. Like, it's just a little thing, but I feel like that it can really, like, in the long run, it will help. And like just little things like that, I always try and kind of make a difference in my part. Like, I worry about me and what I can do.
Very good. Grant, do you talk to others about today's climate, either your friends or your kids, things like that?
Probably not as much as I should. With my family, a few friends. I've never reached out to politicians because I feel that it just falls on deaf ears anyway. I think everybody has to do their part. Like Isabel was saying, whether it's picking or, you know, taking paper straws or, you know, picking up garbage, like everybody has to do their part. And I think we got to be more aware of what we're doing, because my generation and probably the last two or three generations have made such a mess of the planet. It's almost like it's going to be up to the younger people to clean this mess up. Mm-hmm. But they haven't got a lot of time. So,
yes, indeed. Following along on that thought, I'll let you both answer this question. Who has more at stake in our changing climate, teens or adults?
I'd say teens for sure. And nothing against adults here. But we're kind of the future of the world here. Like, we're the ones that are just getting into adulthood and who are going to be the next political leaders and the next teachers and the next biologists and scientists and engineers. And like, we're going to be running the planet. We're going to be the future. And if we don't have role models to look up to and say, okay, like, this is not what we're going to do because it's not right or it didn't work out, then we're just going to repeat it and nothing's going to get changed. So I, for sure, teens, I feel, are the most at stake here.
Absolutely, 100%. It's teens. They have everything to lose. So that's a sad part of this. This is what we're leaving behind. So, yeah, and Isabel's right, too. You know, you got to start doing the right thing. We got to start doing the right thing and putting that ahead of how much money we can make. You only need so much to live, right? After that, it's all greed anyway. So, unfortunately, I think that's what our system is built on, you know?
I agree with that, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good, very good. Here's a thorny question for you. How do you feel about Canada giving the right to vote to 16-year-olds?
I feel certain 16-year-olds are mature enough to vote, especially being in high school when I'm seeing the 16-year-olds run around OHS. I think to myself, I would not want you voting for the next political leader. But then there are some 16-year-olds that I feel that could really improve our political system. So it's kind of a 50-50 for me, because I feel that most, like, 16, you can drive and you kind of have more, I don't know, more power towards you and more responsibility. And I feel like if 16-year-olds could vote, that maybe just could add to it and maybe bring in a newer political system and a better one. So,
Yeah, I think so too. Not all 16-year-old kids are mature, but I think the vast majority of them are. I would have no problem with the 16-year-old voting. I think they should have a voice as well. And you know, one thing about kids today, they see everything. They've got a lot more information coming at them than we ever did. And I think at 16 years old, a lot of them are ready to vote. Yeah.
I'm just going to add something here. You don't have to comment on it, but I wonder how many 50 or 60-year-old people are mature enough to vote. That's the question you can take home. I'll ask you, here's some more personal questions. Grant, what are some things you could do to fight climate change?
Well, that's a good question. I think we have to be smart about how we do things, recycling. We live in a throwaway society. We got to get away from that mentality. So, again, it comes back to, you know, everybody has to do their share, you know. In our food chain, I'm really concerned about that. I've always tried to grow a lot of my own food, and when I do that, I do it chemical free. And when you rely on corporations, you're not going to get that, because you cannot grow acres and acres of food without chemicals. It's just impossible. So the more people that look after themselves, I think it would be better. And that's very. You know, everybody can achieve that. That lives rural, right? You can look after a third of an acre or a quarter of an acre and feed yourself, and a lot easier and a lot cheaper and a lot healthier. So that's where my mind is with that, anyway. So,
good, Isabel. What can you personally do to fight climate change?
I agree with Grant on the point that I feel we have to get back to the mindset that we rely on ourselves and our own sources and our own resources in our own province. Like it's 95% of the food that we have in New Brunswick is shipped out, and 95% is brought in from other countries. And again, it comes down to money, how much money New Brunswick can make and how much money Canada can make. And I feel that if we use our own resources and grow our own food here and just buy local, it would be better for New Brunswick, better for Canada, and better for the waste situation. There wouldn't be enough, like a lot of waste. There wouldn't be, with the fossil fuels as well. Shipping across the world, food, like I just don't get that when we already have perfectly good food here. So, and the resources we have here, like we can live with those. And I just don't get why we're taking the money and buying food halfway across the world and shipping ours halfway across the world. Well, I do, because it's money. It's all about money and greed.
But if we didn't have that world trade in food, I wouldn't be able to get raspberries in January.
Yeah. See, like, that's the thing, though. Like, we've kind of grown up with that. And if we go back to that other mindset, it'd be kind of weird. But I just feel that even that for a little bit would just kind of benefit us in the long run.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I really need raspberries in January. Like, I see no reason why we can't eat things that are in season. And maybe it gives you something to look forward to. All right.
Good point. Yeah. One of the last questions here. Is the climate crisis and future crises, are those the threats we should be most concerned about today?
I feel we should be. I feel that nobody's really paying enough attention to that right now. And I, again, don't know why, because of the whole 12 years thing on the earth. But I feel this is a very serious problem. And I don't think people get how serious it really is. But yeah, bottom line, I really feel that this is the most important thing that we should really be focusing on in our political and social standpoint.
Grant.
Yeah, I do too. Without a healthy climate, we have no future. So it's very important that we get this straightened out. We got to get it straightened out as fast as we possibly can. So what we got to start doing is putting the health of our people ahead of how much money everybody can make. Because after a while, you're not going to be able to eat money or drink money. That's the bottom line. That's how I feel.
To both of you, where should this start? Should this start in Ottawa? Should it start in Fredericton? Or should it start right next door in here in Gagetown?
I think it should be starting everywhere. I think there shouldn't be a designated spot where it should be starting. It just should be a change of the mindset of everybody, not just one place or one type of people, because that's not really going to get us anywhere. It's not got us really anywhere in the last 10 years. I think we all need to be on the same side and the same mindset of this, because it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed very fast. And if we're just on different sides, nothing's going to get done.
I think it's got to start at every level. But I think government has to man up and do the right thing and start doing what their job is, and that is to govern and take away the power from these corporations and do the right thing. That's how I feel. So
very good. One last question. Grant, if you were to win the lottery, a special lottery that required you to spend the next 2 years, all expenses paid, to become a green-caped crusader, what environmental project would you tackle?
That's a good question. Let's see. I'd love to clean up the forest here in New Brunswick and stop raping it. That's what I'd like to say. Clean up our waterways, stop putting poison on it. And I think we'd have a hell of a lot healthier environment.
Isabel, if your parents or grandparents were to fund you for a full 2 years, how would you become that green-caped crusader? And what project would you tackle first?
I feel that I would definitely go with the forests and waterways, same as Grant. I feel a lot of other companies and corporations are fixing the oceans, For Ocean. I know there's many other ones. That's just the one that I kind of remember now. And there's not really a lot of them that are fixing rivers and forests and places like that, because they do. They really, really, really need to get fixed. Because especially ours in New Brunswick with the glyphosate spraying, that's killing every tree except like one type. And that just kind of falls into like the deer, and then the deer falls into another one because, for example, coyotes, and it just the food chain is just kind of going to fall eventually.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think that gives us a lot to think about. I really want to thank today's participants, Isabel and Grant. Also, I want to thank our producer, Cameron Davidson, for recording the session and producing today's podcast.